Lingering clouds this morning will gradually give way to developing sunshine from west to east during the day today. We'll see temperatures mostly in the 60s this afternoon, although a few spots could be up around 70, and winds become north to northwest at about 10 to 15 miles per hour with some higher gusts. Clear and chilly tonight, lows falling back to the mid-30s to low 40s. Friday, we'll finish out the work week with a sunny sky and highs in the low 60s. You might see some clouds arrive late in the day, or maybe not until Friday night, as another cold front works into the area. This front will come through with some clouds Friday night, but little, if any, precipitation, lows in the 40s, and then it becomes mostly sunny and a bit breezy Saturday behind that front with highs in the 60s. Sunday's outlook, sunny, still a bit breezy, highs holding in the 50s. I'm meteorologist Bob Cox in the WTIC Weather Center.
All right, thank you, Bob. In studio, Dan Haar from CT Insider. You can go to ctinsider.com to read all this stuff. Dan, how are you?
Great. It's a good day today.
Why is that? Well, a little free breakfast and hanging out. Listen, you guys, along with WFSB Channel 3, spent like almost like a week and a half, it felt like.
For us and them together, it was five cities and towns in 5 days. Very intensive all day. And I went to Fairfield, the town of Fairfield, this past Monday. So for me, it was six.
Okay, so you did an extra one. So basically, they called it Connecticut Campaign Conversations.
Yes.
And so you go to different places. And I, you know, let's just, before we get into some other hope, we got tons of stuff to talk about this morning. First of all, where did you go?
Connecticut, crazy characters too. I went to, we went to, in order, Southington,
yep.
Coventry, Hartford, Torrington, Woodbridge, and Fairfield, town of Fairfield. And those towns are extremely carefully balanced for population, political makeup, racial makeup. That's a balanced group there.
So you said Southington, Coventry, Hartford. What was after Hartford?
Torrington. Woodbridge.
And then Fairfield?
And Fairfield.
Well, I mean, Southington's Republican. Mm-hmm. I think Coventry would be Republican.
Coventry has gone both ways.
Torrington's Republican.
Torrington is definitely Republican.
Yep.
Yes.
Hartford is Democrat.
Yeah, that's what we're going to talk about.
Woodbridge is, I think Woodbridge would go Republican too.
No, heavily Democrat.
Really?
Heavily Democrat. Very heavily. Woodbridge was Biden plus 35. Heavily Democrat.
Really?
Yeah, Woodbridge is rich Democrat, Yale connected.
Huh. So what'd you learn?
What I learned is that my faith in the spirit of Connecticut residents and voters is ebullient and it has never been higher. And my faith in the ability of Connecticut voters to follow what's going on and make decisions on what on the information that is correct and affecting them is not so good.
Okay, so how could you be optimistic and pessimistic at the same time?
Because I think people have the right spirit. There is not a mean-spiritedness. There is in the political realm,
but not here?
Among people like me who are in the, you know, who are in politics and policy. But out in the world, people just want what's best for the country. And I think their hearts are in the right place, and they don't know where to turn because an awful lot of people are unhappy with either of the two alternatives.
But you imply that there's, or you infer that there's a lot of ignorance out there.
No, I didn't imply that.
Yeah, you said they're not that informed.
I didn't imply it at all. You stated it.
But that's not that encouraging. I mean, because one of my biggest problems, and I don't know about you, and you know, we got to take a quick break here, but you know, finding information that's fact and true is hard out there for us.
It's very hard. It's hard
for us.
Yes, it's very hard.
So for the average person, it's even worse.
Well, let's take immigration, for example. I know we got to take a break, but in 15 seconds or less, immigration is good. The illegal immigration that's happening, the undocumented immigrants that are coming in, are good for the economy, not bad.
Well, there are a lot of jobs in Connecticut that nobody wants, and so the immigration population usually falls into that lane, but it's still, I mean, people want order and they want a process.
Order
is fine.
And
I think it's fair to say that it's okay to want that.
I think order is fine. I'm not castigating people for wanting order. What I'm saying is that people believe it is costing them money out of their pocketbooks, and that is false.
Well, what about the issue of you claim asylum? And then there are all these services provided for you. Is that not true?
The system is broken. Yeah, the services.
Right, but that costs people money. Right. That's taxpayer money. That's hundreds of millions of dollars.
That's offset by the productivity by the people that are working and by the taxes they're paying. They're paying taxes.
This is a bigger conversation because you can make that claim, but I don't know how you back that up.
My point is that I don't think people have a clear understanding of what's happening out there.
Right, but you're stating an opinion and not necessarily, like, theoretically, I understand what you're saying. I'm just saying that from a sourcing standpoint, I don't know how you can prove that the offset is there because it's amorphous. It's hard to prove that.
Well, the bill in 2023 that would have cut off all aid to all undocumented immigrants and really crack down on them working was a net cost of $54 billion over 4 years. That's according to the Congressional Budget Office, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office.
So let's put a pin on that. We can talk more about immigration. We're here with Dan Haar.
Talk about what people said, though. I mean,
that's what I want to hear.
Absolutely.
Yeah, back with Dan Haar, CT Insider, who went basically all across the state in a whole bunch of different types of communities to see what people are talking about. We can continue immigration off
the
air.
No, I don't want to. We don't need to have a 45-minute debate on immigration. But the point about immigration is that I was surprised, and maybe I shouldn't have been surprised.
How important it was to people.
It's right up there with jobs, and in some cases more important. And if people think that there's a crime wave across the country resulting from the numbers of people coming across the southern border, that's just the numbers just don't bear that out.
I actually don't.
Anecdotes are not data.
To me, this speaks to a larger thing. Part of the reason it's such a big issue and part of the reason those stories where it does happen is that the Republicans are winning the messaging war.
There's no question about it. And that would be a major takeaway of in blue Connecticut. I would think I see that Republicans are winning the messaging war, especially in the city of Hartford.
Right.
Because you say that Hartford is a stronghold for Democrats.
It is.
Right. But you know what city? Here's the obvious because of the way the question is being asked. Name the city or town where Trump showed the biggest improvement between 2016 against Clinton and 2020 against Biden.
It was Hartford?
City of Hartford. Yeah. It was 9 percentage points difference. He did 9 percentage points better in Hartford in 2020 than he did in 2016. He still got trounced. But if those 9 percentage points happen again, he wins.
Interesting.
If they happen in Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Milwaukee,
Detroit. Well, I mean, they say in general he's trending better than 2016 and not as good as 2020 in a lot of places. I hear a lot of anecdotal evidence of that. Dan Haar from CT Insider. The one thing I wanted to touch on, I find that we're closer to 20. I don't know. You said the rhetoric is not hot. Like, people are measured in their feelings. And I get, like, on social media and a lot of my friend groups, it's not like that. It's intense. And so I would be encouraged if that's true. But you find
because your friends and my friends are more involved, right? Among the average person in the street, I wasn't going up to people who head organizations and who are policy wonks and media people. I was just going up to the average person in the street talking to people. And the average person is angry that – not angry. The average person is frustrated that there is toxic politics everywhere and that it's getting worse. The average person isn't ranting and raving like I do.
Right. Are they nervous about the country?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. On both sides. Because, as a left-leaning columnist, I believe that one side is good for the country and the other isn't. The other side believes that one side is good. That the people are genuine in their belief that Kamala Harris is a socialist. I don't even know what people understand what socialism
is. Well, they throw on fascism, too, as if they don't understand the term, right?
Well, that's exactly right. No one's accusing her of being a fascist.
No.
And no one's accusing him of being a socialist. Neither one is really, truly the other. But when Donald Trump talks about going after his political enemies openly, that's moving in that direction.
Yeah, I find that there was a piece, I think, in the New York Times that talks about, like, the overuse of the terms, right, and how it waters down the meaning of the terms, whether it's socialist or fascist, and then the average person then doesn't understand what it actually means to be one or the other.
Liberal members of the media are not the people who said immigrants from dark-skinned countries, that's what he said, not in those words, but he named the countries, are poisoning the blood of our country. That liberal media didn't say that. Trump did. Liberal media didn't say, I wish I had the generals that Hitler had. Trump did.
Dan Haar, columnist for CT Insider. I want to ask you, out of those towns, like, what was the like the Hartford observation was really interesting. You know, what other towns surprised you or were really interesting to share?
Torrington. And again, we should understand that this is a very small sample. We're going around and we're talking to people and we're having conversations. You're having, 20 conversations in a day. Well, that's a lot of conversations. If you consider this to be one, having 20 is a lot.
Right.
But that said, in Torrington, I found a surprising number of people who are looking to be looking at both sides. They really want both sides to be represented within themselves. Rather, in Southington, I found a lot of division. I found a lot of people, side A, side B, right? I didn't have enough liberals, so I went to Plantsville.
Stop it.
No, that's no joke. I was finding all conservatives in Southington, proper, and I said, I'm driving to Plantsville. See what I find? And along the walking trail, that's where the liberals were. I didn't make it up. In any case, Torrington was refreshing in that sense. The owner of the bookstore there has a wall of books called Polarization. He's poking fun at the fact that there's polarization. And he's a gun person who's a liberal. And he sees a lot of different sides. And that's what I'm talking about, that sort of thing. And you saw it in Torrington. Maybe it exists everywhere, but I'm sure it does.
How's the Main Street? Is it looking okay in Torrington? Torrington's had some tough times, but they have good bones.
Torrington's looking pretty good. I was surprised to see that Torrington is ranked 156th in median income. There is a lot of poverty in Torrington, but there's also some wealth. The downtown looks pretty good. It's a lot of arts. They've really gone big on arts. It's not just the theater there. It's the galleries there, Five Points, there's a lot going on in Torrington.
There's a lightning rod for our listeners, by the way.
I did once miss a plane from the gate because I'm so hell bent on being the last one on that I wasn't.
Really?
I wasn't paying attention. Yeah.
Did you miss it?
I missed the plane. Well, I walked away. They were boarding, and I wanted to be the last one on, as always, just like Matt. And
you guys would argue over that.
Yeah. We would fight over who's the last one on.
Hey, before we move on to some macro issues and other things, again, it's only a sample size, and I get it. But tell me about some of the people you met.
Oh, there's just some great people that I met. And I want to be clear. You and I can argue, and I like to debate the issues a lot. My job here was to listen, and I didn't get into it with people. I wanted to just listen to what people said.
You didn't project your own opinions?
No. Well, no. There were one or two exceptions where people clearly wanted to have a debate, and I'm happy to get into a debate. Okay. And I would also ask probing questions. For example, this great fellow who's a farm mechanic in Coventry, out there at the High Top Farms, where they're part of the Farmers Cow Consortium, and he's 82 years old. I walk into the really cool lighting, directional lighting and everything, and he's working on a piece of farm equipment. I think it was a tractor, if I remember. And he looks up and says, "We don't talk about politics here." Right. And as there's three types of people who say no, right? The ones who immediately want to talk about it, the ones who really mean it, and the ones you got to talk them into. He was in that first category. He says, "We don't talk about politics."
Let's talk about it.
I said, "Okay." And I start to walk away. Well, he was just a terrific guy. Greg Gordon is his name, and he was concerned. He considers Trump the lesser of two evils. He was a Marine. He did have a great concern about the national debt, and we talked about that quite a bit. Obviously, both parties have contributed, as Jim Himes said in the last hour, to the national debt, and neither party is more or less to blame about that.
Yeah. Well, that's a big issue for me.
Yeah, and he was very concerned about that, and very concerned about foreign aid, and that's a big theme I heard: foreign aid instead of people.
Again, that's also like a myth. To me, that's a messaging thing, that the Republicans crush it on messaging, because a lot of this stuff has been happening forever, and foreign aid militarily, historically, is a Republican issue.
First of all, isolationism has always cut across both parties. There's more of an isolationist bent among Trump supporters than Kamala Harris, but that wasn't true with, for example, Dick Gephardt in the past and various other Democrats.
Sure.
But the point is that every dollar we spend overseas comes back many, many times. The U.S. There's no question that U.S. prosperity owes to the fact that we are getting our nose in the world's business.
Well, military wise, I don't know how you can calculate the ROI, but the one thing I do want to say before I move on to some other issues, the one thing is, when I was a journalist and did stories, I loved the ability to to go into other people's lives and see what they do and talk to them. I found that to be the most inspiring thing about the work, actually.
Malik Daniels in Hartford. He's standing on Albany Avenue in front of the Blue Hills Library with a one-and-a-half-year-old child named Malik, his child. And he's working in a fast food restaurant, but he's hoping to get a job as a firefighter. And he doesn't like either candidate. He's not following it like a lot of people. You know, he's not following it the way we follow it.
How can that be? I don't know how you can't be in it every day. Like, I can't.
I don't know. I can't tell you. There are lots of things I don't understand. I didn't know. There was a convention of the, what was that TV show? It was in Guilford, the Mothers and Daughters. And I didn't know anything about the show, you know? So Gilmore Girls. I didn't know about the Gilmore Girls. So, you know, somebody could say, how could Dan Hart not know about the Gilmore Girls?
Right.
But in any case, that was very uplifting to see him trying to, you know, get ahead, and he's got his kid, and he was talking about how it was stunning to me to hear a 24-year-old talk about when I was a kid, there were more for kids to do around here. There was more, and he wants more activities in Hartford. And he talks at age 24 about how when I was a kid, right, as in pre-pandemic.
And that was, he was probably born in this century, too, if he's 24.
He was born
in 2000.
Probably.
Yeah. Let's start with the 5th District.
That's a good weather report.
Yeah. I mean, I'm good at summarizing. Listen, what do you think is going to happen in the 5th? Because Torrington's in the 5th. You only went to one town in the 5th?
Only one town in the 5th. Yes.
People care?
And I didn't find a lot of people. But again, a very small sample. It's clearly Logan has more support than Trump, maybe not in that town, but in the 5th as a whole. The fifth is less Republican than Torrington.
So the last time they ran against each other, Stefanowski's weak showing hurt Logan. Some people say if Stefanowski had done better against Lamont, Logan would have won.
Well, 2,000 votes, anything can happen. When you get a 2,000 vote in a congressional district, you know, anything can happen. I don't see him having the same strength this time around as last time.
Why?
Because, number one, Johanna Hayes is being a better campaigner. She's just more out there, I think. Number two, there was just the report about the Republican Congressional Committee canceling $600,000 in ads for him.
Correct.
That's not a good sign.
There's also the New York Post did a hit piece on her about how she went to the National Convention over being in Oxford and how she went to the Martha's Vineyard and spent a lot of money.
Yeah, that's a good rap if true, and I'm sure it is. Do you think that resonates with people?
I don't know. That $600,000 getting pulled, whether it's because they're more worried about other districts or whether they're giving up on the district, is a blow to Logan. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But I was just saying that she's had a tough go with some things as well.
There's no question it's going to be a close race. I just don't think it'll be quite as close as the last time, but I could be very wrong. You know, he's a strong candidate in some ways and not in others. He's very good at getting his voice heard. And he connects with people when he's present with them.
Right.
I don't think in the debate, I don't think he did as well as she did.
Well, I think he sometimes lacks some specificity to some of the things he says, but he does, just in watching him, you know, shaking hands, he gets along well with
people.
That's
what I mean. He connects very well with people. Yeah. Yes, and that's a strength.
Listen, we're talking with Dan Haar from CT Insider. Early voting, you good with it?
Oh, sure. I think that it's
are you going to do it?
I don't think so. I like the excitement of voting on Election Day. I think early voting is good to have. As you saw, 56,000 voters. Well, that sounds like great. That's great. That's a lot. You realize that we're going to 1.7, 1.8, maybe more are going to vote on Election Day. So we're chipping away. But I don't think the process seems to be a little slower than it should be.
In terms of getting in and out because there was so much wait time?
Not just the wait time, but the process. When I early voted in the primary.
And just to test it out?
I like to vote.
Yeah, yeah.
So I voted. I went to early voting. And the process takes longer than regular voting.
Well, because they have to put it in the envelope,
seal it.
That's
exactly right.
And then put it in the lockbox or whatever.
That's right.
What I'd like some enterprising journalists to do is I'd like to find out where this stuff is stored. After the vote, like, where do these ballots go? They stay in this box, but where does that box go? Like,
that's a great question.
I would love to know where these are stored. I'm not even implying any malfeasance. I just would like to know.
What do you make of Senator Sampson's statement about the ballots not being safe.
I tend to think that I don't have a ton of faith anymore, but I just don't, especially here in Connecticut. I don't really worry. I don't believe somebody's out there to change or steal or.
I agree. I'm the last person to believe there's a problem.
Outside of Bridgeport.
I'm the last person to believe there's a problem, but nonetheless, all these ballots sitting around, it has to make you at least think.
So I would say that's why I don't understand, like, Stephanie Thomas. First of all, she hasn't been very present. We've tried to reach out to her many times. I think transparency is important. I think if people are questioning the process, they should do whatever they can to make sure they quell. Like, transparency is important. Be like, listen, we're going to put it in the tomb where Jimmy Hoffa is. I don't care where it is, but like, let people know it's safe and where it is.
The tomb that's called Giants Stadium.
You know, but you know, I just feel like I think they're making a huge mistake in their messaging about what's going on, because I think they could quell that kind of criticism, which does have some.
That's right.
After Bridgeport, you can question anything.
But listen, that's all they can do. The system is doing all it can just to get early voting done. I got kicked out of a polling place.
Why?
In Fairfield. I was talking to voters after they voted, which is what we're supposed to do. That's not the law.
That's exit polling. That's
exactly what I was doing. And the moderator came out with a cop from the... It was at the campus of Fairfield University, which Fairfield is... Nobody could be more welcoming of media than Fairfield.
So did you tell them they couldn't do that?
I did, but the issue is I told the moderator that he can't kick me out, but the cop said you can't be here. It's private property. And I'm going back and forth on this now with... some election people, does a polling place on private property
is it become public
right?
For that
That's
day?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, and I think it does, but the law isn't clear.
Also, you could, and again, there was such a digression, but does the police have the authority to do that without you being able to know for sure that the institution doesn't want you there?
That's the question.
Yeah.
I want to be really clear. Fairfield, everybody did everything right. The cop was doing his job, and
right.
Fairfield is a welcoming place. There's no problem there.
Dan Haar, CT Insider. Okay, so I've been thinking a lot lately about DeLauro, Blumenthal, Larson, Courtney, Lamont, 70s, 80s. We might have some massive turnover in the next 2 to 6 years.
We better. I heard Blumenthal said he might run again at age 83.
Well, somebody told me off the record that he's sort of waiting for his son to try to get enough political credibility to try to run for that seat.
I think when you heard Jim Himes today, and clearly the most effective member of the delegation, and that includes Rosa DeLauro, who's more powerful.
Himes is good.
You see, and
Republicans like him too.
And I like Senator Blumenthal just fine, but you see where we would have been at. That seat could have, would have, should have gone to Jim Himes as the senator, and yet now he's now going to be what, 60 something the next time it comes up. Maybe somebody younger will run, but even the next generation are in their 50s.
People have told me that Himes is a sneaky, quiet pick for maybe to run for governor. I don't know if it's true or not, and I haven't asked him about it. But, I mean, do you think this is it for Larson and Courtney? Do you think this is their last term?
Larson is...
If they win.
I haven't talked with him this cycle. I talked with him in the last cycle, and he was gung-ho. I think if the Republicans win the House, that'll be it for him. This, you know, he wants to be in the majority again. So that depends on what happens in the
And
election.
You think Blumenthal would run for another term?
Well, I heard somewhere that he was hinting that he might, and there's no question that Lamont's not just playing games when he talks about running a third term. He's serious,
and I think he's trying to freeze out everybody. He'll wait as long as.
Well, he doesn't want to be a lame duck, but I'm just saying. I'm even saying beyond not wanting to be a lame duck, he actually does believe that he might run again, which is like, you know, wow. Because my response is, can your luck really hold up for three terms?
Well, if you look at the budget projections, if they're in the black the way they're projected to be, what can really go wrong? Although I in talking to this inside baseball crap about the upcoming budget, I think we're going to have a battle.
Big battle.
Big. I mean, and stuff that it might actually pull in the average listener, because budgets are boring. But I think it's going to be very interesting, because it's going to be a real decision about how we want to envision sort of handling the financial future of the state.
Well, remember, we're starting $300 million in the hole.
Right.
Right. So you're starting in the hole, and that's not a good thing to do.
No. Hey, I wanted to ask you, we had an argument off mic about, you know, from my viewpoint, the Harris campaign has stalled and some maybe even been weakened, and you don't necessarily view it that way. But she's certainly not doing as well as she did coming out of the gate. And I'm curious as to why you think that is.
Because she can't answer questions. One.
It's kind of a problem.
Yeah, that's a problem. Yeah, you want a president who can answer questions. And I'm not apologizing for her inability to answer questions. She can't answer a question in a straight and clear manner. That's one. And number two, I like Joe Biden, and I kind of wish I kind of wish that she would throw him under the bus a little more. If she seems to be wanting to protect Joe Biden more than protecting
with
her
that,
ability
that
to
whole
win.
Question about what are you going to do differently?
What are you going to do differently? Yeah. Right. That was a big blunder. You know, when you have an unpopular president and you're running on his legacy and you're given a chance to say, I would do X, Y, and Z differently, right. That's not a problem.
It's a tough spot to be in, but I definitely see your point. Listen, we got about a minute left here, a week and a half out. You went across the state. It's a massively important presidential election. And any just final thoughts?
Yeah, I think this is a particularly bad mood period for politics. People are not happy with the candidates, and people are they believe that other people are unhappy. I think people in their own lives are doing better than they think everyone else is doing. And that creates a sort of a negative energy.
Like a negative feedback loop.
Yes, a negative feedback loop. And I think there is that mood. And it's partly because of the acrimonious politics. And it's partly because of inflation. And it's partly because we don't have a Reagan or an Obama or a Clinton running. We have two people that are not popular.
So you said Reagan, Clinton, and Obama. Is that what you said?
I think they were popular.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the Reagan landslide was unbelievable. Yeah. It's good to talk to you. You always generate a ton of interest when you come on for, you know, you're polarizing, Dan. And I definitely appreciate it. But I love our conversations. I appreciate it.
I'm trying to go along and get along.
At the same time.
You didn't ask me the big question.
What's that?
Yankees in six?
Oh, come on. Is that your call?
Yes.
Yeah, actually, that was my call, too. Matt had Yankees in five, and John Senecal from our fan base podcast had Yankees in seven. So everyone's picking the Yankees around here.